Yeah, the Monty Show on a Wednesday. How the heck are you? I'm Monty, that's Jake. Make.
Hello.
Sure. You follow the show on Twitter, the Monty Show.
M-O-N-T-Y, the Monty Show.
We just have fun. That's why we talk like that. That's why we do this show live on Twitter every day through Periscope. Make sure you find us, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. We got a lot of NFL draft to get to here coming up. Who's the best quarterback in the NFL draft? Because I know for sure it's not Sam Darnold. It has nothing to do with rain or small hands. I'll explain that. So who's the best quarterback? The NBA refs absolutely screwed the Utah Jazz and the Oklahoma City Thunder last night. And we're about a week away from opening day in Major League Baseball, and that's where we want to start today, because if you followed this show on Twitter, you would already know that we had an epic discussion about the merits of the Arizona Diamondbacks versus the San Francisco Giants versus the LA Dodgers, all about all that goodness of the NL West on Twitter today with about 10 folks. And the real question is, are we, as a show here on The Monty Show, are we disrespecting the Arizona Diamondbacks? I think that's a huge question. And I know we talk a lot of baseball on this show, but I think it's a really interesting dynamic between Diamondback fans and reality.
Right.
With all due respect. Because I think when you look at the Arizona Diamondbacks, what is the very best thing about this team?
Paul Goldschmidt.
I think it's Paul Goldschmidt, America's first baseman, Paul Goldschmidt.
Goldie.
And I think it's Robbie Ray. I think that's really where things stop. We're getting a Zach Greinke that is clearly in the twilight of his career. And who knows what the quality Zach Greinke brings to the mound every fifth day this year will be.
Yeah.
But if you look up and down at this Arizona Diamondbacks lineup, and you compare it to the other front runners in the West, and I think that's the Dodgers and the Giants. And on Twitter today, this all started because I said I think the Giants have a legitimate chance here on March 21st, when we haven't thrown a pitch of meaning yet. I think the Giants have a legitimate chance to win this division because I look at the Dodgers as vulnerable. And I look at this lineup, David Peralta, AJ Pollock, Paul Goldschmidt, all world. Jake Lamb, I have no idea. Lammer's an all-star now. His defense vastly improved last year. Is he a guy, though, that you believe is going to hit you 30 bombs and slug 500?
Not sure.
I kind of don't think so. And it's a real problem for the Arizona Diamondbacks. I look at Steven Souza Jr. You don't know what he's going to be like. I'd love to say that Souza's going to hit 30 bombs in the National League. But even at that, he's not probably getting you to a 500 slugging percentage or a 400 on-base percentage.
And who did he replace? I mean, he replaced Tomas, and I think that was a nice acquisition. But at the same time, you're talking about a Diamondbacks team who had to go and get a guy like Souza because they weren't able to bring back a great talent in J.D. Martinez because they didn't want to pay him. And I can respect
that. And I wouldn't have paid him either, by the way.
Right.
So I don't. This is not about faulting the Arizona Diamondbacks for not bringing J.D. Martinez
back. I think it's a fair comparison when you talk NL West and who's going to win it. The Giants and the Diamondbacks see each other all year long, all the time. And so I think you're going to get a great idea real quick about who's the better team.
The other guys that I think matter here, Alex Avila was a great pickup behind the plate for the Diamondbacks. They needed that guy because, frankly, Jeff Mathis was their number one, and he's not a major league offensive hitter. At this point, he's probably going to give you five home runs.
Yeah.
He might hit 225, 230. Okay, so he's a guy that's there to frame. But other than that, Descalzo is great as a utility guy. He can play infield and outfield. Chris Owings is a jack of all trades. He can play infield, outfield, but none really well. And Jerod Dyson is a burner who's not an everyday outfielder in this league. He's not a power guy, but he can run.
Right.
So you have really nice utility pieces if you had a stacked lineup. And we haven't even talked about the Diamondbacks pitching yet. Robbie Ray is clearly the ace of this staff, and he has been for a year now. But Walker, Corbin, and Godley are all toss-ups.
Yeah.
I could see Zach Godley breaking out. I could see him giving you 170 innings. a 3.75 ERA and winning you 12 to 15 games, I could see that out of Zach Godley.
And I think that'd be a great season for Zach Godley. I really do.
I would
that,
agree.
That would be a great season for him. But again, just keep in mind when we're talking about the Diamondbacks, we're talking about guys like Zach Godley, you know, who are still young in this game. Just keep that in mind.
Yeah, and the bullpen is a bunch of pieced together guys that are not yours. You're talking about TJ McFarland's of the world. You know, Brad Boxberger. Obviously, Archie Bradley was the breakout star of this club last year.
And that's really where D-backs fans like to go, right? They like to go right to Archie, and that means we have a great bullpen. Well, I agree that Archie Bradley is turning out to be an elite talent. I think he's going to get there this year. If he can have another outstanding year, I think he'd be considered elite. But that's really all you have. You don't have another guy who can do that.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I think that's what gives the Giants the advantage. And it's what gives the Dodgers the advantage. Because every club in this division is flawed. And I would say really the pitching is the problem in the NL West. So you better have an offense that can drive the ball, that can score 6, 7, 8 runs a game. And I look at the offense in San Francisco with Panic and Belt and McCutcheon. I look at Longoria, Crawford, Pence, Austin Jackson. The Pablo Sandoval story is incredible. Having a massive spring, in great shape, worked on flexibility and agility, and it's clearly paying dividends. Driving the ball out of the park, and he's a utility infielder now. So what's different about this team, and whose name have I not mentioned yet? Buster Posey. This team is no longer offensively shackled to what Buster Posey does on a game-in, game-out basis.
Yeah.
Because you went and got proven performers like Evan Longoria. You went and got an Andrew McCutcheon. That was a deal I thought was fantastic. You have a guy coming off the bench now in Pablo Sandoval. And what does that mean? You have a guy in Pablo who can A, be your first baseman, B, be your third baseman. And one thing that you better not overlook, he can also be your emergency catcher, which for Bruce Bochy is really important.
Yeah.
Because he likes to have three catchers on his roster, but that's a real luxury, right? So I look at the way this bench stacks up, and I look at guys like Nick Hundley, who's going to be your number two. You now can sit Buster Posey, and you can slot Pablo Sandoval right in there at first base. If you want to give Belt a day off, or if Belt's going to play left field for you one day for whatever reason.
Yeah.
Or
it gives you flexibility, and that's what you need.
You have tremendous flexibility where production doesn't drop off. Are you going to get opposite field gap power and drive the ball the other way? Probably not out of Pablo Sandoval, but he's going to yard for you. He's going to go deep. He's going to hit balls into that gap, and he's going to play a pretty decent corner infield spot. And that's what you need out of your utility guy. Now, as far as pitching goes, I think they have arguably the best left-handed pitcher in baseball. Clayton Kershaw is up there as well. But Madison Bumgarner, I think, is still really good. He's still elite. You have Johnny Cueto. He's a big question mark for me. Because a lot of people look at the junk season he had last year. Do you expect Johnny Cueto to bounce back?
Yeah, I do. I think one of the key differences between the Giants and the Diamondbacks is that the Giants have a great quality of coach, whereas in my opinion, I don't know that the Diamondbacks have that. Dave Rigetti is an outstanding pitching coach, and if anybody can take Johnny Cueto and make him have a bounce back year, I think it's Rigetti.
But I'm going to make you feel dumb because Dave Rigetti was fired as the pitching coach, but he essentially is acting as a consultant.
Yeah.
But Johnny Cueto doesn't need anybody but Johnny Cueto. He's capable. He's got mechanics that are odd. He understands it. I don't know what happened to that team last year because they should have been a lot better. But whether Rigetti's there as the full-time pitching coach, which he's not, he's a guy that can be a consultant and help. And I agree with you. Their coaching staff is unquestioned, right? They need Jeff Samardzija to step up and give them 15 wins and not get shelled. They need Samardzija to give them 6 innings every time he goes out.
But I don't think you can count on that. I have real concerns about Samardzija. I don't know that you can count on him not getting shelled. I know you can count on him to pitch a lot of innings, but I don't know that that means a lot of those innings are quality innings or a lot of those innings he's keeping you in the game. You know, he's quality. He's talented. But, again, he's 33 now? So it's not as though he's 28, right? So he's on the back end of his career. And I would say that it's fair to assume that he's going to have several clunkers this year.
Yeah. And by the way, I think the Dave Rigetti story, it's interesting that you brought that up. But I think it's interesting that the changing of the guard that was necessitated after what happened to this team last year.
Mm-hmm.
When you essentially fire a guy in Dave Rigetti, and they replaced him with Mark Gardner, who is...
not Dave Rigetti.
Or no, not Mark Gardner and Dave Rigetti were both reassigned, essentially. So Mark Gardner's out and Dave Rigetti's out. I think that's a huge change for a guy like Bruce Bochy. And I think they needed that because I think, I'm not saying that they had gotten comfortable, but there wasn't the edge that we were used to. You know what I mean? It's when you change your pitching coach and your bullpen coach, which Mark Gardner was your bullpen coach, and now both of those guys are special assistants,
right?
That's a big deal. That's a really big deal. And I'm not sure how you qualify or quantify what that means to this team. I don't know. You know what I mean? But it's really difficult to put your finger on that. And Rigetti's a guy that's been there since 2000. He grew the Lincecums, the Canes. He grew all of those guys. And I think it's very difficult when you are the San Francisco Giants to make that change. You know, and I also think, by the way, that it's not just a guy in Dave Rigetti. You know, I also look at the LA Dodgers.
Right.
The Dodgers, speaking of change, did absolutely nothing. They did nothing.
And I think that I think people don't realize that they did nothing. They flew under the radar the entire time. And I think people have this stigma about the Dodgers that, well, it's the Dodgers. They go out and buy talent. They surely got the Lamborghini of baseball players this offseason,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think when they go out and do absolutely nothing in the offseason, I think that leaves people wondering, okay, well, are the Dodgers still as good as they were, or are they, as you say, vulnerable? I don't know. That's hard to say. I would tend to agree with you that they're vulnerable. They haven't exactly lit it up. Clayton Kershaw in that back is really concerning to me, because if Clayton Kershaw is going to miss substantial time,
yeah,
like he did last year, if he's going to miss upwards of a month, what do you do if you're the Dodgers?
Well, I think that's, again, another reason why this team is so different. And I think why the San Francisco Giants have an opportunity to win this division. And we could go on and on about this, but I think at the end of the day, it truly is all about the LA Dodgers. Because I don't put much stock, no offense to Diamondback fans, but I don't put much stock into the Diamondbacks. I put a ton of stock into the Dodgers because the Dodgers have resources and they have talent. And the biggest question, again, is for the Dodgers, I think, is twofold. I think it's their pitching staff, and whether that's Kershaw or Wood, Maeda, Hill, and Ryu, who are not proven, and I think are I'm not going to say they're unreliable, Jake, but they're certainly not proven.
But again, Ryu missed time last year as well, and Alex Wood pitched his ass off, frankly, last year, and that took them a long way.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot. There's a lot in the dynamic of the Dodgers. It's not easy to have everybody point at you and say, oh, you're the best team in baseball, you're going to win. They found that out last year. Because everybody said, oh, you're the best team in baseball, you're going to win. They had that historic run, unbeaten, and they were dominating baseball, and they did not win. And somehow, someway, the LA Dodgers are going to have to figure out what they need to do to win. I still point to the Neil Walker Yankee signing as something that is just stunning that the Dodgers didn't do that. And I think it's one of those things where, if you're the LA Dodgers, the expectation is that you are going to get the best players, that you are going to have the best talent, and they have not. So I now look at their situation with their lineup. With Turner hurt, they're starting Chase Utley at second base, and you are starting Logan Forsyth at third. And those are two big holes in your lineup, not to mention that Yasmani Grandal, who's a guy who can leave the yard occasionally, right? But Grandal's a guy that can hit a little bit, but just a little bit. And now you're really relying on Chris Taylor and Cody Bellinger and Yasiel Puig. You're relying on Yasiel Puig. Let me say that again. You're relying on Yasiel Puig, and that's a scary place to be. You're relying on Jock Peterson to come through. Sure, Justin Turner's not going to be gone for months at a time. He's going to be gone here for several weeks, it looks like. He broke his wrist. Let's be honest. Now, non-displaced, it's not the end of the world. But I'm telling you now that this lineup is going to go stretches where they're going to lack pop. And I don't know that you can call on Austin Barnes or Kike Hernandez. Maybe they're relying on Matt Kemp. Matt Kemp now all of a sudden becomes a really important guy to them.
He does, and I think he did what he had to do in the offseason. He lost the weight, and I don't buy that he was playing at 220 and all of a sudden he's down at, you know, 200 pounds or whatever the figures were. But the point is that
he
lost
was playing around 250.
Yeah,
I mean, he was a big dude.
And now he's slimmed down. This is very similar to the Kyle Schwarber story, only the difference is Matt Kemp had to essentially revamp his career. I mean, he was on the way out. He lost this weight, and now all of a sudden he's a nice little player for them. It's a scary thought to think that the Dodgers are going to have to rely on Matt Kemp. That's not a good thing. That's not the Dodger way, if you will. That is not them going out and buying talent.
Yeah, but and maybe that's a good thing because the Dodger way hadn't worked for a very long time, and I think part of what Magic Johnson means to the Dodgers and being on the ownership team there and seeing the competition in San Francisco, that you're getting rid of guys like Mark Gardner and Dave Rigetti, who are linchpins on that coaching staff for going on, 17 years.
Right.
And you're buying Longoria and you're buying McCutcheon. I think that's motivation. Only they didn't really change this team. This is the same team as last year. What really is the big difference here? There's really not one.
Yeah.
This is the same team.
Right.
And I think that's a huge mistake because I look around the division and I know, again, I'm sorry. I know I say this every day. I'm telling you, the San Diego Padres are coming.
Yeah, I think people are going to undervalue the Padres. The Padres are definitely a team that is underrated. I think they have plenty of talent. I think, no, they're not going to win the division. We're not going to sit here and say, yes, the Padres are winning the division. No,
not by
not.
A long shot.
They're not winning the division, yeah. But that's not what we're saying. What we're saying is they're going to be a pain in your side the whole year. They've got enough talent to make your life difficult.
I love that. This is why I love the Eric Hosmer signing.
And what did they do? They did exactly what the Dodgers didn't do. They went out and added talent. They signed a big name. And I think for the—
But it's not the big name. See, I think people get caught up in the glitz and, oh, it's the biggest contract in the history of the Padres. Great.
But I don't think that's saying
welcome
a
to
lot.
Welcome to 2018 in the San Diego Padres.
Right.
What they did is they bought a winner. And they bought a guy who can say to a Margot, he can say to a Will Myers, frankly, Will, this is how it needs to be done.
Right.
I've won, you haven't. This is how it needs to be done. This team almost instantly transforms away from Will Myers, who the owner in San Diego said wasn't the guy that wanted to be the face of the franchise. Will Myers is no longer playing first base. He's an outfielder. Eric Hosmer's the face of the franchise, and he's your cornerstone first baseman.
And what's most important is he wants to be that. He's embracing that role, and I think that's vital. The biggest problem with Will Myers is he didn't want to be that. And I think it says a lot about the Padres front office and ownership to realize that, hey, this Will Myers kid that we thought was going to be the guy is not the guy. He can be one of our great players, and he can be a guy that's going to contribute for us on a high level, but we got to go out and get another big name to lead this team.
They addressed a weakness, and I give them a lot of credit for that, here nor there. All of this to say, I think the San Francisco Giants are going to win this division. Now, that relies on them going and buying another starting pitcher or trading for one, buying one, same thing.
Right.
Because I think they're going to need that. And they're going to have to get a performance, and it's probably Stratton, but they're going to have to get a performance out of a pitcher that surprises you.
Of course.
And that's what it takes. It doesn't take last year going and getting Matt Moore, which didn't work on any form or fashion.
It didn't.
Obviously, Bumgarner, Cueto, Samardzija.
You need those three to really be rock solid for you.
Just perform to your career numbers. Right? Just perform to your career numbers and you're fine. You have got to get one of the two young guys. I don't see it in Ty Block. That's just my opinion.
Yeah.
Stratton's a guy that I can see it in. And when I look up and down their lineup, the Giants have enough bing-bing. The Giants have smart baseball players. They have good base running. They have gold glove caliber players at almost every position. Hunter Pence has had a great spring. He took his offseason very seriously. It's the same thing I said about Pablo Sandoval with Hunter Pence. He just, All the Giants have to do is perform to their career averages. The Arizona Diamondbacks have to have breakout, top-of-the-world career years out of multiple guys if they just want to hang around.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the Giants, I think this is what I was saying on Twitter earlier, too, in our discussion. I think the biggest difference is that, you know, the Giants players are a cut above in raw talent. And yep. and so they've already started ahead. The discussion I was having, I said, you know, go position by position, and you'll see that the Giants just straight up have better talent at pretty much every position. The only Absolutely. Position you can say the Diamondbacks are superior is first base. I would totally agree with that. You know, Paul Goldschmidt is a better first baseman, a more valuable first baseman than Brandon Belt is.
Production-wise, defensive-wise. And Brandon Belt's no slouch defensively. No. The guy is – he's a gold glover. I think this year he's going to – if he stays healthy, Brandon Belt, for those of you who don't know, the first baseman in the Giants, has had concussion issues and talked openly about the mental game that he had to play with himself to get out of bed at certain points in his life. So this is a big year for Brandon Belt.
Yeah.
They're backstopped on Brandon Belt with Pablo Sandoval and Buster Posey, who most people think should be playing first base every day anyway. So at that point, Nick Hundley's your everyday catcher, Buster. So you have scenarios where your weak points can be addressed. Now you got to get Chris Stratton a step forward. Watch that guy, and that'll tell you where the Giants go. Because you cannot win a division with just three pitchers. You can win a playoff series with three pitchers. You cannot win a division, in my opinion. You got to have at least four.
Yeah.
The Diamondbacks have one in Robbie Ray. Let's be real honest about the fact that Robbie Ray is the only guy on that staff right now that you can say, that's my guy.
I need you to go win the wild card game, get it done.
Every time Robbie Ray goes to the mound, you're likely to win, mm-hmm. in my opinion. I think he is a 15 to 18 game winner on this team. He's a 3 ERA guy. He's got to believe in his fastball, and I think he does. Every other guy, there's questions about Taijuan Walker. I have no idea what you're going to get out of him.
He's so young.
Zach Greinke looks very old right now. Patrick Corbin is just so damn inconsistent you can't trust him. And Zach Godley's the great unknown. Let's say Zach Godley balls out of his mind. Now you've got him and Robbie Ray. Who's the third guy? Because two doesn't even get you into the conversation.
You're not even sitting at the table.
Yeah. So here nor there, I think the Giants are one. I think the Dodgers are second. What do you make of the Rockies? I don't know what to make of the Colorado Rockies.
I think, you know, it was interesting to me that they didn't re-sign Cargo sooner. I thought it was interesting that they let that float a little bit.
He's another guy that was just a steal.
Yeah, well, he is a steal, but I also think that it's hard to justify his value. We all know that he's a great power hitter, a great defender. But
who misses a ton of time.
Yeah, you know, he's hurt a lot. Yeah. And I just think when he's healthy, he's one of the best, but he's not healthy that much. So
he needs every single year to have 500 plate appearances, and his inability to stay healthy really hurts that.
Yeah.
And you can talk to me about Charlie Blackmon. I like Charlie Blackmon. DJ LeMay, who's a batting champion candidate every single year. I look at Carlos Gonzalez, and I want to see – I'd love to see 600 plate appearances, frankly. That'd be a huge uptick for him, I think. Nolan Arenado's a stud. But after that, Gerardo Parra, Trevor Story strikes out too much. McMahon, Iannetta, who was late to the Diamondbacks last year. There's just not quality there. And they don't have a number one pitcher.
I don't think they have really any quality pitching. I mean, who are you going to point to here?
Well, John Gray is their number one, but I think he's a number three everywhere else.
Yeah, I mean,
John Gray or Johnny Cueto?
Johnny Cueto.
John Gray or Alex Wood?
Alex Wood. John Gray or Jeff Samardzija. That's the comparison that I would draw at this point in Jeff Samardzija's career. I think it's close.
Boy, that's close. That's a discussion. I think that's very close.
Yeah.
I don't think it's an answer. So, hey, one more baseball thing I want to get to. Wait. So I'm going to go Giants.
Yeah.
Dodgers. Padres to come third. I want to say the Arizona Diamondbacks fourth. In the Colorado Rockies fifth, but I'm not married to fourth and fifth.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think it's Giants, Dodgers, 1 and 1A. I think I'm going to take the Diamondbacks over the Padres just because.
Really?
I just think that the Padres don't exactly have the pitching they need to withstand the entire year. I think the Diamondbacks will run them down with good pitching. And then I think the Rockies will finish last. I just don't know what you're going to bring to the table. If they go out and acquire somebody, that changes things. But right now, as it stands, I think they finish last.
By the way, I'd still love to see somebody pick up Mark Reynolds. I don't.
He's played in Colorado too.
Yeah, I mean he was a linchpin for them the last 2 years. So
yeah.
Shohei Ohtani. It was announced today that Shohei Ohtani will stay with the Anaheim Angels all year long. Or I shouldn't say that. It was announced today he made their major league roster. You would assume he'll stay all year long.
Sure, yeah.
Let me read you some numbers, and I'm not a stat geek by any stretch, but I think these numbers are very telling. Shohei Ohtani pitched 8 1/3 innings this spring, the entire spring. He has a 16.2 ERA. 16.2 ERA in 8 1/3. 8 1/3 innings. He gave up 15 earned. And 18 hits. In 8 1/3 innings, he gave up 15 earned and 18 hits.
It's rough. That's really rough. And what before you even told me the hits and the earned runs, I was thinking to myself, really, 8 innings? That's it?
That's it.
That's it? I mean, you should be... I would expect him to be in the teens, at least.
But he's coming off of an elbow injury. Remember that. And this guy, I think this is your Japanese... player problem. The guy has overworked himself into a lather where he's throwing behind the dugout in between innings. He's throwing on the side. It's long toss every day. They have to really tell him he's got to stop throwing.
You got to rein it in.
You got to make him take a day off, which is something they've struggled with. So the plan is that he will start their third game of the year, March 31st at Oakland. He will DH day one. He had 28 at-bats. How many hits do you think he got?
Less than 10.
Three.
That's
he
not
hit
good.
111 for the spring, and he's their everyday DH.
I mean, listen, there's some of this from a hitting standpoint that he's going to have to get used to the caliber of pitching in Major League Baseball. I mean, it's well documented that, again, overseas baseball is not as good as Major League Baseball. The Japanese League
is not nearly as good.
It's AA baseball, right? Yeah. So I think asking a 23-year-old in Shohei Ohtani to come here and be some all-world hitter, an all-world pitcher, it is a bit of a stretch. I think everybody knew that there was going to be a learning curve. I think the biggest question is how is he going to handle his struggle mentally? Because if he gets knocked down and can't seem to get back on his feet for 20, 30, 40 games as a hitter— I mean, that's a real possibility considering his situation. I mean, he's trying to pitch every fifth day, and he's going to DH once or twice in between each start.
And the problem for me is I don't think you can send him down. I don't. If he comes the first 8 weeks of the season, we get to June 1st, and he's hitting 111, and he's got a 16.2 ERA. Haven't you already found a phantom injury? Haven't you already found a way to sit him down?
Yeah.
Can you in the sixth week of the season say, hey, we're going to have to send you to Salt Lake? Can you imagine the Angels doing that? I cannot at this point.
I mean, are they expected to hang with the Astros in the division?
I don't think so because they don't have a pitching staff. They really don't. I mean,
I would agree. And so, with that said, if you're not expecting the team to hang with the Astros and be there till the end,
yep.
I would say if it was me, he'd already be in AAA camp. He'd be starting the year in AAA, and I would be asking him, "Hey, get comfortable. Show me with stats and innings that you're comfortable again, and that you're back to who you were in the Japanese League. Then let's bring you back and let's find your spot in the rotation. What is the hurry? If you know you're not trying to beat the Astros, what's the hurry?
Yeah, they need him in the rotation. I don't think there's any question about that. With Garrett Richards and Matt Shoemaker, they're 1-2. Tyler Skaggs, J.C. Ramirez, they don't have but two really guys you can count on, and Shoemaker and Richards.
But that talent is better than Shohei is right now and will be for the first six weeks of the season.
Tyler Skaggs? I don't know that I want to rely on J.C. Ramirez.
Look,
I don't know.
I'm not telling you I want you to rely on him, but what I'm saying is that a 16 ERA and a 111 average isn't going to get it done by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's got to be under a 4 ERA his first year. Like, no doubt about it. You got to be under a 4 ERA. And I think I'd ask him to hit 250. That's all you got to do.
Well, and I think the other big question here is that their bullpen is a disaster. I mean, Cam Bedrosian, Blake Parker, Jim Johnson. I think that their biggest issue, frankly, is that they don't have quality depth. And I don't know how you fix this.
Yeah.
Because you've spent a ton of money. Their lineup, they're going to hit.
Well, what did you say about the Pujols contract?
Oh, it's an anchor around their neck.
And so they can't do anything. And that's the problem. So, again, you're stuck in this position where you have this guy who's essentially going to be the poster boy of your organization. He's
38 years old.
Yeah. You know, so, but my point here was that Pujols' contract leaves you in a position where the media is only going to focus on your struggles as a team because you couldn't go out and get talent. And they're going to ask you about Ohtani every single day.
Yeah. Yeah, and Kinsler, Trout, Upton, Pujols, Cole Calhoun, Zach Cozart was a great get. I mean, they went out and remade their field, their outfield players.
Yeah.
They went out and remade them. They just don't have any pitching. And Albert Pujols is a guy that at 38 years old cannot run and wants to play first base every day. And that's not good for this club. Shohei Ohtani probably should be your everyday first baseman. You traded CJ Cron,
which I for the life of me couldn't understand.
They sent him out. So I don't know. I think the Shohei Ohtani thing is a huge, huge problem.
Does he ever become a linchpin in that organization?
I think I'm going to bring up a name you probably don't know, Hideki Urabu, who is way before your time. This is a Japanese pitcher that George Steinbrenner brought to New York and never lived up to it. And it's because they wrecked his confidence right out of the gate.
Yeah.
They expected him to win the Cy Young his first start. And Shohei Ohtani's got to stay away from that. Shohei Ohtani, and let's just be brutally honest about what Ohtani is. He's a pitcher coming off of an arm injury who's never been second best at anything in his entire baseball life, ever.
Yeah.
He was a minted star when he was a kid. He was identified. He was developed. He was the best player that's ever come out of Japan, depending on who you believe. And he's the first guy that can do both pitching and hitting in Major League Baseball. And I think both of us have well enough experience to know that's highly unlikely.
Yeah.
He's got a 16.2 ERA. He's hitting 111 in spring. He should be at AAA.
Yeah.
If he comes out and gets pounded and they send him down, I don't know that he ever recovers from that. Shohei Ohtani could be one of the biggest flops in Major League Baseball free agency. We're going to find out what that kid's brain is made of. Because I think, and again, I'm open to the idea that I'm completely wrong. Shohei Ohtani is not a prospect anymore. He's 24 years old, 23 and a half, 24 years old this year.
Yeah.
He's not a prospect anymore. This is a guy that you paid just for the right to negotiate with. If he comes out and just dies before our eyes, I don't know that he ever recovers from that. That's why it was so critical to send him to AAA to start the season. And just say, hey, it's an adjust. Use the cultural difference because he's really struggling with that. Does not speak English, right? Really struggling with that. Does not understand that you cannot throw that many pitches in a game after the game. Like, he gets shelled last week and goes and throws 50 more pitches on a backfield. It's like, hey, man, maybe that's not the right thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, maybe
and that's a philosophy thing.
Maybe, but does Epler, does Billy Epler, the GM in Anaheim, have the cojones to say no? We're not going to do that. I don't think so. Mike Socha clearly is not pulling the strings here.
I just don't understand how you don't have the authority to tell him no. You're not going to throw. He is their player now.
But what this goes back to what we talked about yesterday or the day before on the show. Shohei Ohtani wrote his own script. Shohei Ohtani said, I'm going to Anaheim, and you guys are going to let me pitch and hit. And I'm going to start the third day of the season, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. And that's clearly what this is. He got to handpick his interpreter. He got to bring his trainer with him. Like, he's on his own program.
And I'm fine with that. He can be on his own physical program and all of that. I mean, let him be comfortable in that stuff. But when it comes to throwing... That's not, I'm not comfortable with letting you just throw as much as you want. That's
how,
not,
but how does a guy, how does a pitching coach talk to him? Like, because it's this interpreter thing. How does a pitching coach even have a discussion with him? I don't know how you do that. I think the cultural difference is crushing. When you are a Japanese baseball player, you by nature, you are already very prideful.
Right.
And when you're Shohei Ohtani and you've never failed at anything baseball related ever, this is a crushing defeat for you. You are, and I don't care who Shohei Ohtani is, he's struggling with his confidence.
Yeah.
He's asked himself more than once, man, can I do this? Can I do this? And if he's not, if he has never said that to himself, he's not human. So, I mean, I really feel for him.
Say he said that after the Ian Desmond home run.
I'm going to go ahead and say the fact that he's got a 16.2 ERA is shocking to the Japanese media conglomerate that follows him.
Yeah.
Because there is a big money organization of media members that follows him.
Yeah, I mean, they think he is the best player pitcher in the world, you know, and I don't think there is such a thing in a sport like baseball. I think baseball's got a funny way of humbling people.
Do you need him to hit or do you need him to pitch?
You need him to pitch. It's that simple.
I think exactly
you've
right.
got more than enough talent in your lineup to get the job done.
I just send him down.
Me too.
Shohei Ohtani is going to make his pitching debut March 31st at Oakland in a big ballpark, so he should be able to just let the ball go. We'll see if that happens. And he's going to DH on opening day. It'll be very interesting to watch. Follow us on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Hey, I'm going to talk a little best quarterback in the NFL draft. Because today we got a look at Sam Darnold, the prodigy, the prodigal son, the New York Jets savior. Or just a guy that played quarterback at USC.
Right.
There is a ton of hype around Sam Darnold. From hand size to, you know, hey, is he better than Josh Rosen? Is he not? Is he? I look at Sam Darnold's workout today, and he performed exceptionally well.
Right.
It was cold and raining in Los Angeles. He threw outside, which I think was really important because people said, hey, he's got small hands. He can't throw in bad weather.
Right.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And he did really well. But my biggest problem with Sam Darnold, and maybe he's the guy that breaks the mold, as much of an athlete as he is, because he is a natural athlete, he's still a USC quarterback. And you cannot point to a guy in the NFL who's been absolutely the best quarterback in the NFL who went to USC, because those guys don't exist.
Yeah.
The best guy, I think head and shoulders the best guy, is Carson Palmer in recent times. You have a guy in Palmer who fought to his last breath last year for the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't tear a knee in Cincinnati against Pittsburgh, maybe we're having a different conversation. But he did. When you have, a guy in Mark Sanchez, who's best known for a butt fumble. When you have a guy in Matt Leinart who wanted to stay in college and is better.
It's a calamity of errors.
It is. Like, I can go up and down the list. The Rodney Peets, who are solid, solid quarterbacks, not spectacular. The Rob Johnsons. I can go over and over and over this. Sam Darnold is, A, going to have to play in that stigma. B, I don't think he's the best quarterback in the draft, because I don't think there is a best quarterback in the draft. That's one of the major problems I have with this draft, is that you can, hey, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, whoever your guy is.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, if you had the number one pick in the draft, that this guy's going to lead your franchise, and he's going to take you to multiple Super Bowls, or he's going to be Matt Ryan?
No, I mean, I don't think you can definitively say that they're going to come out on an NFL field against grown-ass men, you know, who are paid to play football and perform at the level they did in college. I don't think you can say definitively that they will. I think you can project that, you know, certain guys will be better at certain things based on their body size and hand size and, you know, all the measurements and whatnot. But you can't definitively say that, you know, that Sam Darnold is going to come in here and just light the world on fire, and he's going to be the best thing since sliced bread. You can't do it.
I think if I am the Cleveland Browns, I'm going with Barkley. This guy is...
How do you not?
Yeah, and granted, you can slide down. That's what I would probably do. I'd trade that pick. I'd slide back. But Saquon Barkley's a guy that I really like a lot, and If I'm the Browns, I trade out of the number one spot, because I think that number one spot, whether that's, and let's say you are the, you know, you are the Bills, the Jets, the, you know, you have options. And I think teams at in this day and age have to figure out how to make the best decision in the draft. And the Cleveland Browns traded for Tyrod Taylor, which I liked a lot.
Yeah.
You got Landry in there to work with him. I don't think you need to take this risk. Trade back, because it's, and I always say this, if you're going to get fired doing it your way.
Yeah.
And if I'm the GM there, or and the Browns really don't have a GM, let's be honest, but the Cleveland Browns need to accumulate multiple draft picks. And the best way to do that when you have the number one pick is to trade out. But if you got a gun to my head and I have to take one of these quarterbacks, I'm probably taking Allen. I love big arms, and he has got a huge arm.
Yeah.
But I get that he's not refined, and I think he is one of those guys that has tremendous potential to be Ryan Leaf. But boy, he is.
Boy, that's a savage comparison.
But they're physically very similar.
Oh, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying to think about it in those terms is tough.
And he believes in himself. You know, I don't know. He's probably the guy I go with. I mean, I like Josh Allen a lot. I like Josh Rosen a lot. You know, I want to see a guy take the football and lead me to a Super Bowl win. And I don't see that in any of these guys right here. I really don't.
No, I think what you see here is you see a lot of talent. You see a lot of athleticism. You see a lot of great plays in college. But I think when we're talking about the NFL, what are we always talking about when we're comparing the best quarterbacks in the game and their ability to run the two-minute drill? We're always talking about their mental ability to slow the game down and make good decisions.
Yep.
And you cannot measure that with draft picks. I just don't think you can. I mean, sure, you can watch tape on them if they happen to be in that situation in college. But for me, if I'm drafting one of these guys, I'm going with Allen as well. I'm okay with the fact that he's a raw talent, as they say, because I can develop the hell out of the guy because he's got a huge frame.
Yeah.
He's 6'5", 230. What have we loved about Big Ben? And I'm talking about the football player, not the person. Football player Ben Roethlisberger. He's a big quarterback who can take the beating.
Yeah.
That's what is the greatness of Cam Newton? He can run and he can take the beating. So
rolling his truck or getting hit by a linebacker, yeah, is amazing.
You know, it's huge. So I just think that I would rather have a bigger quarterback who can take punishment, who's a little unrefined, rather than a Baker Mayfield who's smaller, who has this great talent and will not take the punishment as well.
And I think Baker Mayfield is a risk because of his attitude. I'm not. Go humble.
Baker likes Baker, man.
Yeah, Baker likes Baker a lot. Baker believes in Baker a lot, which I don't really have a problem with, to be honest with you. I don't want a guy to say, well, I'm going to be okay. Yeah, I'll be all right. I'll be all right. No, you won't. But I think the team with everything in their control is the New York Giants. I think at number two, the world is your oyster. You have a guy in Eli Manning who can help you win games for the next. I think it's this year. I think Eli Manning right now is year to year. People will tell you, well, he can be there for the next 3 years. Nah. When I look at Eli Manning, I see a guy that's on the downside, and I would much rather have Eli Manning this year and then say, okay, well, we'll play this year to year.
So he's a prime candidate for the Giants. What you're saying is they should draft a quarterback and let him develop while Eli's there.
Or you can draft Saquon Barkley because you have a pretty good idea. You have a pretty good idea that the Cleveland Browns are taking a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And if I had to guess right now, I'd say it'd be Josh Allen. At that point, I think the second best quarterback in this draft is Josh Rosen. But boy, isn't it tough to pass on a guy like Saquon Barkley, who right now is going to come in and you believe that based on what you saw in college and what you saw at the combine and interviewing him and talking to him. And this only is if your personnel people really like Saquon Barkley, that's what needs to happen. Because Saquon Barkley, by most people's account, is going to come in and contribute right now.
Yeah.
And you also have to address the Odell Beckham Jr. situation. Are you married to the guy or are you dumping the guy? That's a huge question. Because if I look at Barkley and Odell Beckham Jr., I think they're one of the top probably two or three wide receiver running back combos in football.
Yeah.
Saquon Barkley can catch the football. You know, they're not going to be as dynamic as a Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell, let's say, in Pittsburgh with your guy Ben.
Yeah.
But I certainly think the Giants, A, you could not go wrong drafting Saquon Barkley. That's what I would do.
Right.
But B, if you want to draft a Josh Rosen, if Josh Rosen's sitting there, great. I think the team with the most to lose is the New York Jets, because you're going to get everybody else's used underwear, right? Like, whoever falls to third, you're either going to get Saquon Barkley or you're going to wind up getting the second best quarterback in the draft.
Yeah.
Because I think we're going to see quarterback running back. That's my guess. And right now, my guess is that they wind up picking between two Los Angeles quarterbacks for the Jets. Rosen or your guy Darnold.
Yeah.
And I'm not drafting Darnold because I don't believe in USC quarterbacks. I'd take Josh Rosen there.
The Jets haven't exactly had the best experience with USC quarterbacks. So.
Yeah. And if I'm the Denver Broncos, I'm just hoping for the best. I'm hoping that Josh Rosen's there. Because the Denver Broncos desperately need a quarterback that they can hitch their wagon to and have them pull them down the field.
Yeah.
Because they have Trevor Siemian was supposed to be that guy. He's not. You know, Case Keenum. You know, but
Case Keenum's the classic example of a guy who made a couple nice plays. He got paid, and now he's riding off into the sunset.
Yeah, and then I look up and down the draft board. There's not a whole lot of quarterbacks being taken. You know, the rest of the top 10, certainly. I think Miami definitely needs one, and I actually think Miami's a Baker Mayfield spot. I think that's the first spot in the first round. I think they're at 11, where Miami could absolutely go Baker Mayfield. The problem is, Baker Mayfield's a wild card, and do you want Baker Mayfield on South Beach? And what does that say to Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah.
And my guess is they're no longer looking at Ryan Tannehill as a linchpin number one guy. That would be my guess. I could be wrong. But I think to answer the question, I think the best quarterback in this draft right now is probably Josh Allen. And if it's not Josh Allen, I would take Josh Rosen.
Yeah.
And I still think the New York Giants are sitting in the catbird seat. Follow us on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Let's talk the association hope. We are currently watching the Toronto Raptors dismantle Cleveland. This is going to be a high scoring game here on March 21st, a Wednesday. The Raptors are up in the second quarter, 74-61, excuse me. I want to go back to the Jazz last night against the Atlanta Hawks.
Yeah.
That's one of the worst officiated games I think I've ever seen. Do you believe the officials, and I rarely ever say this. Did the officials cost the Jazz a game last night? I think they did. Having watched most of that game.
Jazz should have never been in that position.
Well, Atlanta's kind of got their number. Dennis Schroeder's a really good scorer.
No, and look, I give Atlanta credit for winning that game, whether they should have won, could have won, didn't win, whatever. They won the game. And really, my perspective on this has always been that if you're in this specific matchup, the Jazz are the better team, right? We can all agree on that. That the Jazz are a more quality team, should have won the game.
Without question.
And I think they were a little burned out from this winning streak, if there is such a thing.
And I think there are teams that are a pain in your ass. And I think the Atlanta Hawks are very difficult for the Jazz to deal with.
But the Jazz didn't shoot well. They didn't shoot Truth. Well. They didn't play well. And I think that's ultimately what cost them the game. But the officiating is always a topic, whether we're talking about LeBron James or Donovan Mitchell. There is always a missed call that, you know, the DeMar DeRozan call. How do you miss that call?
Oh, bad. Specific to the Jazz.
Yeah.
Joe Ingles had two shots to tie and then one to win, blew them both. Okay, maybe it wasn't your night. But how on earth does Jay Crowder not get a single call, it felt like, in this game? Three times I can remember where he gets blown up going to the basket, and it's just not called. Deadman blows him up in the paint, no call. Like, you have to call that. Like, you know, Mitchell driving down the middle of the lane gets hip checked, no call.
Yeah.
You go down the other end and there's a complete dive that's called, and it's called a flagrant. And I'm just like, what are we doing? Atlanta's getting phantom calls and the Jazz are getting no calls. Like, is there
at home?
Is there an edict? Yeah, at home. Is there an edict here? Is this just an officiating crew that's having a terrible night? Because again, I'm not the guy that believes that officials target or point at teams. This looked a lot like that. This looked like a game where the Jazz were not supposed to win this game.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you explain that. And I don't know how you explain to Oklahoma City fans that the NBA today announced that the Marcus Morris three that won the game for the Boston Celtics was supposed to be no good. A, they're saying that the Marcus Morris inbounded the ball on that play, by the way, that it should have been called a 5-second violation. He couldn't get the ball in.
Yeah.
They're saying that when he got the ball from Tatum, that he picked up his pivot foot. He did. I've watched the replay a bunch of times. He did. So there's two turnovers.
Yeah.
And then, of course, he hit a step back three to win the game. And the Oklahoma City Thunder, who are fighting for playoff spots and home court advantage, by the way, lose a game in Boston last night that they shouldn't have lost. How bad is this officiating right now?
I think it's as bad as I can remember. And again, just to say, I'm not trying to bag on the officials or say that NBA officials are out to get teams. But at the same time, there are a lot of situations where I feel like LeBron is the best example that I can think of. There are a lot of times where I feel like, man, he's getting hit on these drives and not getting the call. And it begs the question, what is the line here? Because LeBron James is known for being physical. That's part of his game. Hey, I'm bigger and stronger than you. I'm going to the basket, and you're probably going to foul me. And it's up to the ref to call it or not. So what's the line? Do you call it every time? You should.
But there's ticky-tack fouls, too.
There is.
Where he's dribbling the ball, and he pulls up, and he gets raked on the arm, no call.
Yeah.
The issue here is what LeBron James said, that this has become a shooter's league. I said last night on Twitter, and a bunch of people agreed with me, they don't call the body in the paint anymore. Like when you put a shoulder into
saw that last night.
Yeah, a penetrator's chest, you put a shoulder into a guy's chest, no call. Now, you step under a guy's feet when he's shooting a three or you tap him on the elbow, that's a whistle and a 4-point play. And I why?
Well, this goes back to the Kawhi Leonard play right in the corner last year.
Yes,
that's
absolutely
where this started. And so I think, yeah, I agree with LeBron that there's been a clear emphasis on protecting shooters and protecting guys' space to shoot. And we're seeing a lot of ticky-tack, you know, three-point shot fouls this season. But at the same time, at some point, if you're LeBron James, you have to understand that you're creating contact. And I understand that's part of the game, and I appreciate that part of his game. But when you're creating that contact, you have to absorb it, too. You can't say every single time, okay, well, there was contact, it's a foul. You know, I guess it's more about what they don't call, but I don't know how you become more consistent as a referee. That's my point here. I don't know that there's a way that they can get better.
So let me ask you this. Who's the best team in the NBA? Because we saw a matchup in Houston and Portland last night that was phenomenal. Walk me through your thoughts on who the best team in the NBA is.
I think the Rockets right now are the best team for me because at a certain point, James Harden is just a better player than anybody else on the floor. We saw against Portland, James Harden absolutely dominated Damian Lillard, and all you Portland fans out there can hate on that, and I'm a Dame guy. Dame time all the way. But last night, it was not Dame time. It was Harden time, and he was cooking. And I think James Harden is, as Mike D'Antoni said, the best offensive player he's ever seen. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but what I do know is true is that James Harden is the MVP this year. He is the best player in the league. Offensively, he's dominant. You're not stopping him. So the point here is that when you ask me who the best team in the league is, it's the Houston Rockets. Would I be saying the Golden State Warriors if they were healthy? I don't know. It's candies and nuts at this point. They're not healthy, and they're not healthy going into the playoffs. This would be a different story if we were 30 games into the year and just past the All-Star break, but we're not. I think we got like 10 games to go or 8 games to go until playoff starts. What do you say about that? I don't know. The Golden State Warriors should be the best team in the league, but right now they're not because they're banged up. The Raptors are beating the hell out of the Cavs in the first half tonight. It's still the first half. I'm not ready to say that they're going to win this game, But at the same time, they look like a really good team. My problem is I don't know how you're going to stop James Harden. That's the biggest problem for me. So right now, it's the Rockets.
Well, I think part of the problem here is it's as you said, only March. And it's really hard to put your finger on who the best team is. If you are forcing me to say so, it's the Houston Rockets. They're going to win the championship. Because I think they have the total package. You don't go up against a Blazer team and dominate Damian Lillard like that. That just doesn't happen. I mean, think about that. Damian Lillard has been one of the most dynamic scorers in the NBA this year, and he got dominated by James Harden.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you account for that. Now, CP3, who broke out an ugly-ass pair of new Jordans last night, and I'm a Jordan guy. Those shoes are terrible. I hate shoes with straps, by the way. But CP3's good, and their unit is good, and they're collectively playing well.
Yeah.
James Harden is dominating the NBA more than I thought he ever would. And part of that is he's actually playing defense now. And part of that is he's in a conference that is supposed to be world-beating. And, oh, man, just chalk it up. The Warriors are going to go on a dynasty-type run here. Only they're not. Because I think the Houston Rockets are the best team in the NBA, and I think they have a hell of a chance to win a championship right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think at the same time, as far as the Warriors and where they're at, I think they'll come back. You know, they'll get healthy. And I think when that happens, you will see a Western Conference final with the Rockets and the Warriors. Who wins that series? I think that comes down to who makes the least amount of mistakes. The Warriors,
and it could be home court advantage.
Well, the Rockets will have home court advantage.
And I think that's a big deal.
It is a big deal. But for me, it comes down to who makes the least amount of mistakes. And mistakes in the NBA are turnovers and foul trouble. And I think the Warriors, we've talked about this a lot, the Warriors turn the ball over a lot for really no apparent reason. They're trying to be too cute. And so I think coming back, I think their mentality needs to be X and O basketball. You need to play good, fundamental, quality basketball. And when you have the talent that they have, it should not be rocket science.
So no James pun intended.
Harden, yeah, right? No pun intended. You know, so James Harden shouldn't be able to overwhelm the Warriors. The Warriors have overwhelmingly better talent. They just got to play as a unit, and they'll win.
And I also think the Raptors are a really good team as well. Like Van Vliet is leading them in scoring tonight.
Yeah.
Against a really game Cleveland team. So I this is going to be a better than we all thought NBA Finals coming up in June.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any question. Hey, let's end the show with an update on the bomber. Because we told you yesterday, news broke during the show that there was another bombing in Austin, Texas. This story is fascinating.
Yeah.
So you also know by now that this bomber went into FedEx and sent out two packages. Well, that got him caught. Because he went into this FedEx store with a crazy wig and hat disguised thing that worried people so much that they followed him out to his car and got his plate and called the cops and said, hey, this weird guy was just in here. And that turned out to be the Austin bomber.
Yeah.
And now we're finding out that he also left a 25-minute rambling message on his own cell phone, a confessional of sorts. They haven't said what's on there. The only thing cops have said now is that the bomber did not credit a terror group or bring up any hate.
Yeah.
So he wasn't saying this is to kill all white people. That's not what he didn't say anything like that, according to officials. But he went up in a blaze of glory. They tracked him to a hotel. And as they were pulling up to get him, he was in his car leaving. And when the cops approached, he blew himself up inside of his car. And it's man. Can you imagine the pain?
No.
I don't even know. How do you...
It's unrelatable. I mean, you can't relate to this guy. I don't know how you get to a point mentally where you're... You know, I don't even know what he was saying to himself, so I guess I'm not going to pretend to know. I don't know what he was saying to himself, but clearly it wasn't anything good, and clearly it led to his suicide. So I don't know. I'll be curious to see what that recording is, because oftentimes in these situations, you know, when somebody is you know, out killing people randomly, and they're out for whatever purpose. The suicide note or tape or whatever they leave behind often is the key to telling us, well, why were you doing this? Where were you at mentally?
Yeah, what was going on?
Yeah, I don't know what was going on, but clearly there was something wrong. And by all accounts, this was a nice little kid until he started making bombs. So
yeah, it was one of these stories that we always hear with these terrible, heinous people. My little Johnny couldn't have done that.
Yeah.
His aunt was like, I'm stunned. I had no idea. Our family's decimated that our relative was involved in this. So who knows? By the way, speaking of relatives, I cannot end this show today without talking about Donald Trump Jr.
The Don.
The Don Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And his affair with Aubrey O'Day, the singer, who was on The Apprentice way back in the day. And shortly after filming wrapped up, they began an affair. And the details of that affair have come out, and it turns out that Donald Trump Jr. told her he no longer loved his wife. He's going to leave her, and they were going to be together. And he had put that plan in motion, and Donald Trump and Ivanka Trump talked him out of it.
Mm.
Said, you cannot leave your wife. You've got kids. You can't do this. Since that affair, they've had two more kids. And now the crazy part of this is Aubrey O'Day is putting out songs about Donald Trump Jr.
Yeah.
Like, this whole thing is crazy, and this is my point, and I'm not trying to be a moral high ground guy, but I'm going to stand on my moral high ground.
Uncle Monty is in session.
Uncle Monty has advice for you. We as men get so wrapped up in what they look like.
Yeah.
Come on. Donald Trump Jr., no offense to Aubrey O'Day, but Aubrey O'Day is not the girl that you want to sit down with and have great conversations until the sun rises.
Yeah.
Right, like, yeah. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I don't think you're wrong, but I think that's why she fills this role so wonderfully.
Now, if you want to procreate and you want to explore the human anatomy,
sure,
Aubrey O'Day's your girl.
Yeah.
But yeah. At what point are we as men going to figure out that the physical specimen is not worth giving up half of what you own in your entire existence? Like, I am amazed
by
that.
I don't know. There's so many different stories, and again, when Donald Trump was elected, I said right then and there, we are going to have endless content every single day, new content on CNN and in all the news networks of this administration. And this is yet another story that is just piling on to the disgrace that has been this administration so far. I mean, there's been so many things, whether it's politically, in their lives, like the personal choices, money. You know, the amount of times Donald Trump golfs versus the amount of time he's actually being an acting president, like just all these different things, it has not pointed to a great presidency.
And you know what's interesting about that is a lot of people talk amongst their friends, well, are you pro-Trump? Are you anti-Trump? Did you vote for him? Here's the problem. He's the president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So his failure is our failure. And I think a lot of people forget that.
Well, I think a lot of people don't view it like that.
But how else can you view it? If the president of the United States...
How are we saying that he's not our president? He's not our president.
Well, I didn't vote for him.
Right.
And I can sit here and I can say, well, I'm going to move. I'm going to Canada. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Okay, I get it. But if Donald Trump fails, we as Americans are failing. If the Russians truly manipulated our election... There's all of this talk about why Donald Trump never, not once, on the record or anywhere else, not in Twitter, nothing, can you find Donald Trump criticizing Vladimir Putin? You know, we're watching Fox News today, and they're talking about that it's no problem. He's trying to build relations. You flip on CNN. Well, I wonder what Vladimir Putin has on Donald Trump, because Donald Trump has never criticized Vladimir Putin, not one time that anybody can find. That makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I watch news.
Yeah.
I'm not a Republican or a Democrat, conservative or a liberal. My point is, if it makes sense to me, I'm going to look further into it and I'm going to be like, hey, yeah, no kidding. Donald Trump has never criticized Vladimir Putin. He called and should he have called and congratulated Vladimir Putin?
No. No.
You don't think he should have?
No, hell no. Not with the position he's in. If he had had a perfect cakewalk presidency up until this point, he may have been able to get away with this. But again, let's judge this guy by his actions in his personal life. Okay, he made the choice to have an affair with a porn star. I don't care who that porn star is or what her status is in our society. She's a porn star, and it's that simple. So you right there made a choice to have an affair.
You're saying it's a problem?
It is a huge problem. Morally, and what does that say that the president of the United States, the person that represents our country, had an affair? And now it's public knowledge. Now he's getting run through the mud. And it's really not a good thing. And so at this point, when I think about, okay, well, does Putin have something on Trump? Yeah, I think he does have something on Trump. If you look at their business relations, what Trump has in Russia.
But think about this for a minute. What does that mean that do you think he has dirty laundry on Trump? Do you think that he, are you saying that?
No, I think it's a monetary situation. I think Donald Trump invested in something that's in Russia, some sort of, I don't know what it is, but it's something.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a way that Putin got leverage over Trump in a business fashion. It's that simple. And if it's not that, then I don't know. I don't know what it could be. But again, because he made the choice to have an affair with a porn star, I don't put anything past him. It would not surprise me.
You're not happy about that.
Well, it's not that I'm not happy about the porn star thing, but the porn star thing is the bottom. That's where I say, okay, well, you decide to do this, so I can't put it past you to, you know, do anything else, whatever you want to point to.
Okay. Look, I don't even disagree with that. I'm not the guy that goes out looking for porn stars to have affairs with. So I'm with you on that. But I just thought it was really interesting that Donald Trump Jr. now has been caught in this, because he's getting divorced, and he's been caught in this whirlwind of an affair with this singer, Aubrey O'Day.
Yeah.
I guess it's, and everybody's saying, they're trying to make jokes out of it and stuff. I don't make jokes out of it. Like father, like son. Well, maybe, maybe not. Everybody's different. We all make our own choices.
Well, that's clearly true, but, you know.
Well, thank you. Look, Gen Z-er, I don't even know. You're a millennial. I get it. Anyway, it is what it is, right? I mean, it is. It's one of those things that you can't undo.
So, yeah. I don't disagree. I don't disagree. Look, I
don't
think,
judge guys
dude,
for the sex
family,
thing, though.
Oh, I do. I do. I absolutely do. Because I think it's that first time you choose to cheat on your spouse, whether that's your girlfriend of a week or your wife for 20 years, you're just not a good person. You're not.
Wow.
You're not caring about the other person.
See, I'm not sure that I'm willing to go that far.
So Donald Trump Jr. is still a good person?
No, Donald Trump Jr. is not a good person for a lot of other reasons.
Is Tiger Woods a good person?
I think that's really difficult. Tiger Woods... I believe that there is an addiction to sex. And this is why I say pornography is a great destroyer of men.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
I'm not the guy that cheats on my wife, but I also don't think cheating on your wife makes you a terrible human being. You know what? I'm not ready to take that leap with you, millennial. I'm just not. Anyway, follow me on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Back tomorrow. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.